Good. All right. Good morning, everybody. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, May 30th, 2017. And before we move to the Pledge of Allegiance, I would ask Board for two adjustments to our agenda. I'd like to pull additional items, number 5 and number 6, which are dealing with the Ames Economic Development Commission and our contract with them, up to just ahead of consideration of minutes.
Okay.
Okay, no objection. None. We'll move on and ask if everyone would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, thank you again and good morning. First item is public comment number 1. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items that are on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so can come right up to the microphone. And seeing no one moving the microphone, now comes one of my favorite things that Story County has started doing, and that is our Citizen of the Year. I'm especially excited about this one, as this was a nomination that I was pleased to make. I think it's completely appropriate. And Irv, we're sure glad you're here today. Dr. Kloss is an associate, is an ISU professor emeritus of animal ecology. He came to Iowa State in 1975 and retired in 1999. Anybody who knows anything about water health and soil health in Story County and around Central Iowa has absolutely crossed paths with Dr. Kloss. Currently, he is Assistant Commissioner of Story County Soil and Water Conservation District. He represents the district on Prairie Rivers of Iowa Board, which I am fortunate to serve with him on, and the Squaw Creek Watershed Authority Board. Again, I'm fortunate to serve with him. He also serves as president of the Friends of Ada Hayden Heritage Park, which if you read the Des Moines Register today, you know that they've got some goats out there right now taking care of some invasive species. During retirement, he has taught and taken courses at Iowa State, as well as being a leader in educating our community on the reality and the politics of climate change and how we can make this a better place. I am really, really honored to declare that our Citizen of the Year in Story County for 2017 is Dr. Irvin Kloss. Congratulations. So we're going to do a photo op. We're going to hear from Dr. Kloss if he'd like to say anything. And I've never known him not to say anything. Would you guys like to add anything?
No, sir.
Irv, this is so deserved, and I am very honored to have known you and to have had you as a mentor and a teacher. Thank you.
Irv, what words of wisdom can you give us today? So first of all, congratulations, as Laura says, well earned. Long overdue.
Oh, thank you. It's a big surprise.
Good. That's what we intended.
I came here under false pretense. I'm pleased to be active in all these things, and I think that all I can really say today is thank you. We've still got a lot of things to do in this area, and both in Ames and the county. So,
are you starting to feel, I've meant to ask you this in some of the other meetings, are you starting to feel that we're making progress toward making some appropriate changes?
I've been pretty proud of the fact that we started working on the Squaw Creek watershed with a group of volunteers in 2001. And it's taken 17 years to get where we are, but we're really making some progress now. And it first took an effort in gathering data as to what was going on. And the thing that I guess pleases me most is the cooperation that we're now receiving from the cities and the counties in this area. Mm-hmm. You know, when we first started with Squaw Creek, I found out that the rural citizens believed that AIM wasn't doing anything about water quality, and they weren't. And so there was a lot of finger pointing. And now I think the Squaw Creek Authority has rectified some of that, and we're now working together, I think, in, on the same same track of trying to improve the water quality.
Outstanding. Well, thank you so much for your work. Thank you for making Story County a better place. Now we're going to do a picture right here. As well. So I step right in there.
Okay.
I'm going to
take three on the count of three. 1, 2, 3.
Thank you very much, my friend. Thank you. Thank you.
Carry a hanging basket. It's not in there.
What a good way to start a meeting. I like that. Next item on our agenda is Emergency Residence Project Agency Report. And we've got Carrie here with us today. Hi, Carrie.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for coming today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I know the last time I was here, I was fresh on the job. I think I'd only been here for about a month. So I feel a little more confident on what's been going on lately. To kind of follow up from my last report, we have made a lot of changes at the Emergency Residence Project since I started. We've completely reformatted our intake and exit paperwork. We've also implemented an assessment tool that gives us a better idea, objective idea, than the number of barriers that people have to housing to be able to maintain it and obtain and maintain housing. And it's giving us some really good data as I look towards future programming or future housing development within the Emergency Residence Project of what the real need is and objective measures versus just stories, because everyone's story is a little bit different. We've also increased our average length of stay from 2 weeks to 30 days, which has been a huge benefit to the clients that we're serving. So we're very excited about that. We're collaborating with primary health care officially. They come in on a weekly basis and work with their outreach worker to get connected with services. We're also in the process of working, trying to get additional night staff hired so that our associate director can be more focused one-on-one with the clients and providing some more hands-on case management services, which is very much needed. We've gone through a lot of cosmetic changes over the last several months. It looks like a brand new building inside and hopefully outside soon. We're very excited about that. We've had developed a great collaboration with RSVP and the Volunteer Center. We've been able to obtain some amazing volunteers that really have helped us maintain a lot of our day-to-day stuff and keep us moving forward. Looking ahead, one of the biggest things that I wanted to talk about is our partnering with YSS and Access to develop a regional system for homeless services. At the state level, this is something that is being brought down as Housing and Urban Development have determined that they want one of the things that all HUD-funded programs have to work towards is developing a coordinated entry system for each Balance of State Continuum of Care grant. Within Iowa, the Balance of State Continuum of Care grant covers 96 counties. So having one system to cover 96 counties is near impossible. So what the Iowa Council decided to do is to have counties self-identify as regions and build from there. And then Hawkeye Area Community Action Program in Cedar Rapids has been funded to help the region figure out and develop how that regionalized system is going to work. That's one of the committees that I'm the chair of the committee at a state level. So I'm in the process right now of developing statewide policies and procedures of what needs to be part of the coordinated entry process, what the requirements are, so that each region will have a better idea of what they need to do, what we recommend them to do to make this effective. The region that we have is called Two Rivers. It's going to include Story, Boone, Marshall, and Hardin counties. The reason that those four counties were picked are because of the collaboration with YSS and Access and the communities that they already cover. That, excuse me, that region may be expanding in time because there are still counties that are left uncovered, but with the initial grant application, this is what we wanted to kind of start with. And our first meeting will actually be on Thursday to bring in some of those partnering communities and partnering agencies to the table to figure out how we can get this up and going and what that entails. Right now, what we're primarily going to be looking at is data collection so that we can get a really firm idea of the people that are experiencing homelessness within the four counties and what that level of need is. So a lot of that will be including the BI-SPDAT, which we're already doing, and then figuring out how that data collection piece is going to be working. Some of the barriers that we're going to be facing with this is part of the coordinated entry process is to make sure that the people that are the most vulnerable are getting into housing programs first and foremost. So programs across the nation are going away from the first come, first serve type of program and doing more of the based on the level of need at entry. Our barrier to that is that we don't have any long-term housing programs to really meet that need. So even though we have the need, we don't really have anywhere to refer those people to. So that's another thing that we're going to be talking about during the development of this region is what other resources are out there that we can refer people to so that they can get into housing and that we're not seeing them back over and over and over again. And so that we can hopefully help them end their homelessness versus just putting a Band-Aid on it and saying, see you next year. One of the other barriers that's going to impact us is the fact that the Marshalltown Emergency Shelter closed in February. Yes, in February officially, and the Boone Emergency Shelter will be closing at the end of June. And we've already seen an impact with that, especially in our single men's shelter, because we have been consistently full since October, which is very unusual for us. We're still averaging about 10 to 12 gentlemen a night. We've only had about 1 week where we were down to 5 or 6 gentlemen. So we're already seeing the impact of those closures, and I foresee that's going to continue to get worse. Based on that, like I say in my report, our needs are many. One of our long-term goals is figuring out how to develop a bigger shelter so that we can better meet the need. Ideally, I would like something that's handicap accessible, something where we can house all the different populations in one building so that we have better access to them and can work with them a lot more effectively than what we're currently doing. So that's one of our long-term goals, hopefully within the next 5 years, but we'll see. And then on the back side of the report, just kind of giving you an overview of the numbers that we've served in the so far this fiscal year. We're at over 7,000 nights of shelter. We've also assisted over 1,200 individuals with homeless prevention. I gave you the breakdown of the different communities that have all been affected by our homeless prevention assistance. I think that covers what I wanted to highlight. Are there any questions?
Questions.
Yeah, Carrie, where is the funding coming from in your homelessness prevention?
That is solely based, we did get one small grant from Story County Community Foundation. Okay. The rest of the money is all the private donation.
Because just doing the numbers in my head of just whether it's just grant assistance for 1 month or a couple months or whatever, I mean, this is a significant investment.
It is a very significant investment. Our guidelines are usually $250 for a single individual or a household with no children, and $350 for a household with children, and they can only receive assistance once every 12 months. And we are, I will say, seeing a lot more new households that have not received assistance from us before. And the majority of them are working households that their car broke down or if something happened, they fell behind and they're needing our help to get caught up and to stay in their housing. So, but it is a significant investment. It keeps us very, very busy.
Mm-hmm. I just think, I mean, the dollar amount you're talking about, $250 to $350 to many people doesn't seem like a lot. And yet that's the difference to some families.
It really is.
Helps them very much so. So thank you.
Marty, questions?
Carrie, I was glad to hear that you wish to augment your data collection, but I would like to see, as you do that, that you would have the ability to do non-duplicated counts, in that, you know, when you have a truly new person versus a repeat, and I don't know if that is an experience that you're having. It just gives you an idea on truly if we're dealing with a new population versus a permanent.
And we're able to do that within our fiscal year, but I will see what we can do to see about doing that year after year.
Well, it just, as you made mention of the fact on an anecdotal basis, you were seeing on a male population on an overnight basis that you had not seen.
Mm-hmm.
And are we dealing, with a new influx? I mean, are we dealing with an uptick, or are we just seeing, familiar faces? It would be nice to know, and you're the one that would be able to derive that data.
Definitely. And I will say, at this point, from what I'm hearing from my staff, especially Troy, who's been there for 20 years, a lot of people that we're seeing now are not people that are repeats that have been here before. There are a lot of new faces.
Well, that just takes us in another direction, and it's just like we'd like to know that.
Yes. Yep. I will definitely look into seeing what we can do to make that happen.
Thank you.
Yep.
So, Carrie, I really appreciate the collaboration between you guys and primary health care. I'm curious, have we ever explored the possibility of you collaborating with Mike and the dental clinic specifically as you're starting to house people for longer than 2 weeks up to that 30 days? It just makes sense to me that the two of you might be able to collaborate to really provide what I consider to be a much-needed service to many of the people that you're dealing with.
That is an excellent suggestion. Thank you very much. I will look into that.
Okay. Any other questions?
No,
Carrie, thanks. You're doing a great job. We're glad you're
here.
Thank you. All right, so now we're pulling up items 5 and 6 from additional items to talk about. It's discussion and consideration of proposed contract for economic development services between Story County and the Indian Economic Development Commission. That's first. And then second, we're going to have discussion and consideration of the contract for workforce development between Story County and the ADC. I know that we've got Dan Colhane here today. This is a relationship, and Leanne, maybe you're going to go through this with us. This is a relationship that we formed several years ago, I want to say in 2012 or 13, and have been really pleased with the impact and results that it's having for the county in total when you talk about workforce, but for our rural areas and our smaller communities when you're talking about the economic development. So, Leanne, we'll hear from you first, then I'd like to hear from Dan Colhane.
And I did just give each of you a copy of the Workforce Development Services contract, proposed contract as well. I forgot to hand that out ahead of time. This is what's before you this morning, as Rich just said, dates back to July 2013 is when the first contract was initiated between Story County and the Ames Economic Development Commission. What's before you today is a draft of some proposed amendments that individually the Board of Supervisors has brought to my attention. I've drafted that random by Ethan Anderson, our assistant county attorney. What you see in red line is language proposed to be added. If it's in strikeouts, that's proposed to be removed. And Ethan's proposed changes, I did send it to him last week, and the copy you have are in like a purplish darker red. It gets a little bit complicated to look at. Today's action is just considering the amendments and giving staff direction to come back with the full contract next week or the following week. On consent, we do need to get AEDC's signature first and then put it on the board's agenda. If you have any questions, if you want me to walk through the changes or just...
So, So we can, I think it's appropriate for us to go through what's changing on this. The AEDC has seen the proposed changes with the exception of they have not yet seen, unless Dan's checking his phone for email, not yet seen the proposed changes from Ethan, which are mainly grammatical and don't seem to have any substantive impact. But go ahead and take us through what's different about, and we're starting with the economic development contract, what's different about the economic development contract from what we've had for the last 3 years?
I'll go down to start. The beginning is under Section 3, Scope of Services. And there's adding a new paragraph or new subsection 2, just addressing the title of the individual that has been signed through Ames Economic Development Commission as our primary contact, but this contract is to use services all of AEDC. So that just does clarify that. And then amending subsection 11, clarifying that there's a database of commercial and industrial properties rather than we just simply said properties. And then,
I didn't know if you were going on 11. Okay,
yeah.
Go for it.
And then adding that if this contract is to be terminated, that we would Story County would receive a copy of the database in a format that we can, as pretty standard, we can as usable.
Mm-hmm.
Then adding a whole subsection B to the scope of services that addresses the manner in which reports are given to the Board of Supervisors and communication occurs between AEDC and the Board of Supervisors. And then section 2. My apologies. I had my glasses on. I can't read my glasses on. Section 3 is method of payment. This is our annual changing the dates to coincide with the upcoming fiscal year. And then section 5, clarifying that basically paying, adding to the termination clause within 30 days prior written notice.
That's it. So questions or comments on the proposed changes?
Yeah, I'd just like to comment here. Thank you for entertaining these changes. I think they clarified some areas. Also, I just want to make note for the public, one, in that section B where it talks about different information, is that the guidelines, the work flow for the person will no longer be engaging in any lobbying, which had been an issue of concern in the past that the same person who was providing some of our services, the main services, was also engaged in lobbying.
An issue of concern to a few.
To a few. I'd be one of them. Okay. So, and some citizens who had commented to me. So, I just really appreciate the changes in here. Thank you.
Absolutely. Let's do workforce right now, and then we'll have Dan come up and talk to us about both. And then, like, there is no action today other than if we're going to make changes, since this is coming to us on consent, now would be the time that we need to make changes to this proposal. So, Leanne, go ahead with workforce.
Under Section 2, Scope of Services, address subsection 1, addressing how reports should come to the board, and the nature of reports, and changing it from annually to quarterly. Some wordsmithing on subsection 2, rather than just targeted, but then adding for specific priorities and programs. Adding a new subsection 6, I'm going to state that coordinated work cooperatively with other workforce initiatives and our program supporter funded by the Board of Supervisors, the DOS when requested. Adding number 10, that addresses the lobbying that Laura, you just mentioned, was the prior contract. I think it's the same language in both. Again, revising the dates and section 3, method of payment, to reflect the coming fiscal year. And then under section 5, adding the termination contract language that was the same.
Outstanding. Marty, questions or comments?
I guess I would like somebody to explain to me why 10 is an issue, because I sometimes see lobbying as being a catch-all for just having private discussions with somebody you're familiar with.
The issue is that, particularly in this last session, but in general, is that the Chamber of Commerce and AEDC does not always share what the priorities are of the necessarily the Board of Supervisors or the county. In fact, in some instances, maybe contrary to something, or we haven't taken a position on it at all. And so the concern about constituents that talk to me, and my concern is the fact that when we started out here, the person who was our primary contact and primary contact out there in the county did not have that responsibility of also going and being the official registered lobbyist for the AEDC. And there were complaints about it once this session got into some of those issues where there was not agreement. In fact, there wasn't agreement between the Iowa Chamber or the Business and Industry and the Iowa Association of Counties even on some of these issues that went down. And so all of a sudden we had our the face of our contractor being the person who is always also down there with responsibility. So this just keeps us being able to move forward on a path where the face of the main lobbyist for the chamber and AEDC, a separate private entity, is not also our face out there representing us on the programs that we provide.
Sure. I just think it's important to note that the county has not ever funded lobbying, the contract between Story County and the AEDC is in fact with the AEDC and doesn't specify, or didn't until now specify, what other responsibilities somebody might have. Now we're precluding certain responsibilities from the primary person servicing this contract would be. That answer your question?
I would assume, and maybe this is just my understanding, is the fact that our contract with would be Brenda Dreyer right now would still leave her opportunity to be an employee of AEDC and operating in a capacity for AEDC, that we would not be wholly directive on her activities.
Yeah, this doesn't preclude any activity that I can see from anybody other than serving as the formal lobbyist and being the primary contact for this contract.
Correct.
So it doesn't limit anything else. Mm-hmm. It just says don't be our contract. And I'll go one step further. This is one of those that it's important to. I believe it's important for this board that we try to find that sweet spot where we can get to a 3-0 vote. This is an important contract that we have. It's providing, at least in my estimation, I think in many people's estimation, some great services that were not provided prior to us entering into this agreement to provide these services. And we did this a couple weeks ago with a proclamation a few weeks ago where, quite frankly, Marty and I don't attach a negative connotation to the word business friendly, but you do, so we took it out so that we could get to a 3-0 vote. I view this item 10 in the same way. I went over and visited with Dan Colhane and people at the AEDC and said, hey, this is a request from the county in order just to clean this thing up and make sure that we can get to that 3-0 vote. And I'll let Dan speak for himself, but it seemed like we were very receptive to making that all work. So that's how we got there.
So in the lobbying term, this would be, because I see Brenda's role on behalf of the county as we contract with her within the domain of Story County. Right?
Absolutely.
Correct. Right.
Okay, but I'm just trying to get a underpinning foundation on this. On the lobbying.
The AEDC, as I see it, absolutely. The AEDC, as I see it, is committed that whoever, in this case Brenda, whoever is the primary liaison servicing this contract will not become a registered lobbyist. That's the commitment.
Correct.
To be made.
Correct.
That's okay, but you don't consider lobbying being a person-to-person contact in the sense that outside of Story County that somebody could have a conversation about Story County, for anything to have a conversation in Des Moines or with another organization or another agency?
Yeah, as long as, you know, she, as long as she's talking about something that is involved with what she does, mm-hmm. yeah, for us. And then, of course, she can always have a conversation for something that she doesn't do for us personally or whatever.
Okay.
But, right,
I
we're talking about...
lobby for us outside of Story County.
Well, not for us.
I'm not, folks. Lobbying can be just a conversation because you can lobby for somebody's support. You can lobby on behalf of an interest that you represent.
Yes.
You don't have to be registered to do that.
Correct, because we assumed that the majority of those conversations would not be in the state house with a elected official on behalf stating a position, actually stating my organization has a position. Instead, I think what I'm hearing here is if she's down talking to someone, even if they a state rep at a meeting down in Des Moines, and she's talking about, we've got this great program, and boy, we'd sure hate to see this tax credit go away because it could hurt one of our people or whatever. That's not lobbying as we're talking about. We're talking about the registered lobbyist.
I just want to make clarity on that. That there's no unfettered ability to have discussions in behalf of Story County as she understands it.
Correct. Yes.
We are not federating. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Anything else for us? Dan, we'd like to hear from you. So I'll speak for me. I've been thrilled with the results of this contract. I've been so appreciative at how easy the AEDC has been to work with us. While we got some initial pushback from some of our communities on awarding this contract to anything affiliated with Ames, every day I hear more and more from our communities how appreciative they are to have the services we're offering through the AEDC. And so I'll start with thank you.
Well, good morning. It's been a really good process. And, you know, this process we just went through with the contract, it was the right time to do it given the transition of the person primarily responsible in my organization for the delivery of services to Story County, both in economic development and workforce. You know, it's interesting. I completely concur with the removal of lobbying activities, because when I think of lobbying, I think of registered lobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that Brenda or anybody else from my team won't be in Des Moines talking to Debbie Durham, advocating for us to get a project funded in one of our communities here in Story County. I'm really excited. Drew Camp was the first person to more or less quarterback this exercise for us. Did a really, really nice job for us. Really took us to a level that I probably couldn't have imagined. Now, as we transition to Brenda Dreyer, I'm really excited about Brenda because of her long-time level of responsibility working specifically in very, very rural parts of Iowa and having a lot of project success, and not just in terms of that economic development deal where you cut the ribbon, but housing programs, infrastructure funding, a whole host of things related to the economic development process in general. And so we're excited about moving forward. Drew did a great job for us, and Brenda's off and running and is making her own connections and relationships with folks around Story County, which is what we asked her to do. But at the end of the day, the contract sits with our organization, and we deploy someone on our team, and right now the most likely person to do that, and I think going forward, will be Brenda Dreyer, given her experience and her desire. I'm speaking for her now, but I think she's loving the work she's doing for us here. So
it comes through loud and clear. It came through loud and clear when Drew was our primary point of contact, and Story County has been really, really fortunate in both of us.
Yes, yes. And then finally, I would just say both contracts, the language is fine. You know, we're good. The reporting, the tweaks to the titles, I completely respect and understand that. I have no questions or inquiries this morning regarding either of those things. We appreciate being given those in advance to look through those. And so we're grateful for the partnership we have, and we look forward to continuing this forward.
Outstanding. Questions for Dan?
I have none.
No, thank you, Dan.
Leanne, if we take no action right now, you'll just send the contracts as amended over to the AEDC for them to review and sign and get back, and then the board will take final action on it. Everybody good with that? Thanks, Ann.
And that'll be next week on the limited agenda, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Next is consideration of minutes from the 23rd.
I move for consideration of the minutes as presented.
Aye.
Motion and a second. Chi.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Personnel action. We don't have any today. Claims. It was a huge claims week, as happens at the end of the year. The two primary elements in that was a large transfer to the mental health region, extremely large transfer to the mental health region, and purchasing of rock were the two major components of what was our largest claims week this year.
Yep.
Okay, largest claims week this year. Questions or comments or a motion?
I move that we accept these claims as presented. Go.
Second.
Motion and a second. It's nice that we're in a position to be able to pay $2.8 million in one fell swoop. Further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chi.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda board. And I don't have anything to change. I don't have anything to add.
Are you pulling anything?
I'm not pulling anything, Scott.
I move consideration of the consent agenda as presented.
I second.
Motion and a second. Chi.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. No public hearing items today, so we're two additional items. Discussion and consideration of Tuesday, July 4th, Board of Supervisors agenda. Something happened on July 4th that we need to talk about?
Needless to say, it's the holiday, and it's not a claims week, so you guys can either not have it at all or have it on Monday.
I would suggest that since it's not a claims week, consistent with past practice of the Board of Supervisors, that we just cancel July 4th.
I move that we cancel July 4th.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Yeah. Olson?
Aye.
Chi?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. We are not meeting on July 4th. Next is discussion and consideration of revised violence in the workplace policy. Alyssa, we don't. Alyssa, were there changes down at the state this year that impacted some of our policies?
A few.
Okay.
A few. So we updated our violence in the workplace policy fairly recently, but there was a change. House File 517 actually amended a section of the Iowa Code. So what we did is we did get an attorney opinion on our policy, and then I did make a change under the weapons section. It says instead of listing out all of the types of weapons, we just said that Story County prohibits all employees from carrying weapons of any kind onto county property unless otherwise provided by state law, provided for by state law. And by putting that statement in there, we would comply with the new changes in Iowa Code.
That's the change?
That's the change.
Questions?
Actually, I do have one. I've been thinking about this. The state law about the new carry, okay, it still doesn't prohibit us as employers, though, correct, from saying what an employee can or can't do. So that's why, unless otherwise provided for by state law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so is that the part in there about saying that we can't stop them from carrying, or we can't stop them from carrying on our property?
Stop them from carrying.
Okay.
And so that just states that, you know, if they're allowed to by state law, then we don't prohibit that. But they have to be allowed to by state law.
Okay.
So we still prohibit it unless, you know.
Unless the state says we can.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Other questions? This is not 7-day review, right?
No. There's really no.
We're violating room. State law as it is.
Correct. So we needed to get this change in before July 1st.
Do you want to make that motion, or do you want to say
sure. No, I'll make the motion that we change it to comply with state law.
As presented.
As presented.
And waiving the 7-day review. I would second that.
We're good?
Yeah.
So making the change as presented, waiving the 7-day review. We got a motion and a second. Further discussion?
None.
Olson.
Aye.
Chi.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes, and we're done with it. It's not coming back to us.
Oh, perfect.
Thanks, Alyssa. Next item is discussion and consideration of public access defrib policy and procedures.
Because I can't say the full word.
Okay, so just to get a little bit of background, the safety committee with county funds purchased an AED to be placed in the administration building here. Along with that AED, we needed a policies and procedures manual. And, you know, going into this, looking in what we needed to do to comply with state code, we took some information to the safety committee, and they decided that it would probably be the best option to purchase the policies and procedures, at least for the first year. We purchased the medical oversight for that. It will also help with those of us that will be keeping the logs, checking the AED on a monthly basis, keeping the training up to date, those logs. So this policy was a canned policy from the company. I did have legal review. It complies with state code. I also asked for the 7-day period to be waived because it is a purchased policy. So we can't really manipulate that unless there was some major thing with our state code that it didn't work. So I don't know if there are any other questions.
Questions?
No, Aaron's been doing all the work to, I guess people would ask, well, where are you going to put them? Where we used to have the fire hoses, yes. If I understand correctly.
Down by the recorder's office, there was a small hole in the wall that was worth to put the case. It'll be easy access, you know, if we have responders come here or anything.
Right.
It's on the main floor. We won't have one on every floor, but yeah. That seemed to be the best location.
I have no questions.
Okay.
Go ahead if you have something.
No. I was going to ask for a motion. Yeah.
I would move consideration of our public access defibrillation policy and procedures for the admin building, waiving the 7-day review.
I second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes, and there is no further review on it. Thanks, Alyssa. Still with us. Discussion and consideration on Story County compensation schedule. As everybody will recall, we received a new compensation survey. We approved everything we got with the exception of the schedule. We had a 50% spread in all of our job classifications. We wanted to discuss where we were going to put that and if this, in fact, is where we were going to set the compensation schedule. Ask Alyssa to dig into it, and this is what we have.
So what you saw as documentation on the agenda is there is a compensation schedule that has a 40% spread between min and max. There's also an option for a 35% spread. And then at the bottom, I went through and did some calculations. So after the cost of living increase that our employees will receive, so for a 40% minimum to max range, there would be about $158 annual impact for the county. At the 35% spread, there was about $9,300 annual impact. I did get some more documents from Springs that I asked for the average reported mid and max spread out of the entities that we surveyed. That was at 35%, so they ranged anywhere from 15% to 45% for the agencies. And ours is pretty, if you look at the structure that we have 8% in between our grades. We also have the min to max the same for each grade, so it's a 40%. You look at some different compensation schedules, and as you go up in the grades, the higher the grade, sometimes they widen that spread depending on how they want their structure, how their comp. We just kept it at the same, regardless if it's a grade 8 or a grade 17. We've always kept it at that same percentage since we implemented this back in 2012. There are pros and cons to both options. 40% does give you a little bit higher maximum, but it does have a little bit lower minimum, which we tend to bring. The higher the grade, we tend to bring those individuals in closer to the minimum rate, unless there's some market factor. We have had some struggles bringing in individuals close to that minimum because, it's getting tough to get individuals. Qualified individuals in certain positions.
Right, so, but this would raise our minimum by 5% over
Correct.
What it currently is
yeah.
in these positions at 40%, but it also reduces our maximum by 5%. So the concern for a few of our existing employees that happen to be getting close to the maximum is this reduces how far they can go. I tend to think that a 40% spread is pretty reasonable. I think 50 was excessive. It made sense to me when we first instituted this that we would have 50 to give ourselves as much flexibility as possible. But now we know more. The positions that we have that are, in fact, bumping up against the maximum, I believe there needs to be a review of their job duties to see if, in fact, they're in the right class or if they're doing something that's not reflected in their job description that would actually bump them up a class, which, in fact, would increase that by 8%.
And when I looked at the 40%, it does not place anybody over the max.
Right.
Currently, we have one position that's within, like, 2%. The rest of them have anywhere from 6 to 10% still movement. And one thing to mention is we do take a look at this compensation schedule on an annual basis. I'm not saying it's going to go up every year, but we do take, you know, what other entities are doing. We look at the CPIU just to see, because we do want to keep our comp schedule within market. So those max doesn't necessarily, it's going to be the max in 5 years.
Right, so we'll review in-house every year, and then we'll send out every five years for a formal review.
Yep.
But those two things we never should get too far. And one of the things that we learned in the report is that we're really, really close.
We've
done a good job maintaining contact with what the market's actually doing. All right, thoughts, Mark?
You had said a dollar difference between 40 and 35%. And that was what again? Have we tightened the range?
Oh,
$9,000.
A little over $9,000 difference between the two.
So $0 if we leave it at 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in addition to the 2% raises that everybody gets on July 1st. But it's $0 if we stay at 50%. It's $158.83 if we go to 40%. And if we go to 35% spread, which we would have some employees over maximum.
We would have one.
One employee over maximum if we went to 35%. Then it's $9,700.
$9,300. And you don't want it too narrow, but then again, you don't want 50% either because that's too broad. So.
On a quartile basing, because that's where we're at, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
So when you say, well, it was nice to hear, and I excuse me the name of the firm that we were so close to being right where we needed to be. I mean, 90.96 something, which is that we're actually monitoring and trying to bring in or stay current on our offerings and responsive to the tax dollars we use to do that. I guess I was just, you know, to me, I'm sitting here in my mind, it's just like, when you move to 35, I get it that you're going to start pushing people out of a gap where you will take away the incentive dollars because you leave them virtually with only a cost of living increase. You don't have any merit attached.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that this would be problematic because those, if they have gotten to top of range, you just enumerated the reasons why.
Yeah.
And they're probably your overachievers, your upper achievers, and you just want to give them something to continue to work towards. And I guess since we're doing a review every year, so I guess it's me, I'm just speaking out loud what I'm thinking about in my mind, 35 to 40.
Mm-hmm. There isn't much difference. You're talking 2.5% on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you just shrink it in a way that affects people. And
don't worry, we're at 50 now.
We're at 50. So, I mean, if you reduce it to 40, that structure is very, very good for county. That would probably be my recommendation, is to take it to a 40% spread. Looking at the positions that we have 26 positions on this. We have 6 between midpoint and max. So 20 of them do fall in that initial midpoint section.
And so 40 pushes takes nobody out?
Yeah.
Last week I had left at wanting to keep that the 50% on the top end, all right, which would have moved the bid range. So looked at the new numbers, looked at how many people actually were impacted, and I'm good with 40% and no additional changes or gyrations, recalculations needed. That I think it, yes, I will make a motion that we go with the 40% minimum to maximum range.
And I would support that.
As presented.
Absolutely, and that's what I want to clarify. That's with the midpoint as presented in the report, but now we're going 40% spread from min to max.
Correct. It is as with the midpoints as contained in this graph.
That is my second.
All right, you got a motion to second. Further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. We are now 40% spread with the midpoints as listed.
Thank you for what you did, Lisa.
We got to a good good result there.
Yeah.
Let's see. So we took care of 5 and 6. So now we're to item number 7, discussion and consideration of the 2017 Urban Renewal Area Project Schedule for Phase 2 of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor at the Iowa State University Research Park. Hi, Dan Leanne.
Yeah, my whole voice back. Do you want me to talk about the next three items together?
Let's see. So we got the research park, we've got urban renewal plan, and consultation meeting. Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk about all of them now.
Okay. Following up on the board's action last week, I'm back here before you. The discussion last week was to determine what type of financing would be used to fund the phase two of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. The discussion directed staff to come back using the urban renewal area funding, the TIF funding, for that phase two project, the phase two of the project. So what's before you today are three separate agenda items. The first one for your consideration is the tasks and the time frame. This delineates from now until early September or mid-September the process that staff will use to bring the draft changes to urban renewal plan before you for your consideration, and then the next step for the bonding for the funding, actual funding. Again, that would start last week, and the time frame may go out till September 12th. Then second, there is a draft plan that I would bring to you then later in June. The changes are one to add the amendment line in the front, to clarify, actually number 5 on page 2 needs to not be in red. I missed that one. That was the old change from last fall. Clarify, rewrite number 25. Last year, when this was amended, we did not have the name Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. It just said Story County Conservation Park. So just clarifying that. And then if the direction today is to go forward with the draft plan, I'll work with Lisa to, on page 6, get the county financial information to include. I'm bringing the draft plan together to you today for just some discussions so I can make the changes. That goes in the public notice that goes out to the taxing entities. And that's the third item before you, the consultation meeting notice. The consultation meeting will be June 13th at 9 a.m. Meeting the board's agenda. So we've done that now 2 times. That way I think it works fairly well. The taxing entities would be those, I think it would be the Ames School District, City of Ames, and then Washington Township, I think are the 3 taxing entities that would receive notice of this since it's specific to the research park location.
Mm-hmm. That's the only addition that would be happening. Just to clarify, so this does not preclude any other discussion of urban renewal items. I'm thinking of our smaller towns coming forward later in the year. I'm thinking of any other projects that might come to us. This is specifically dealing with Tedesco Park at the Research Park.
Yeah.
Questions for Leanne?
No, I think we went over a lot.
Okay, so the first item is project schedule. Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to go back to page 1. And this is a statement that I don't even understand what it may intend to mean, but the way I'm reading it is not, I think, what necessarily the board wants. And what I'd like you to do is right above number 2, section 2, property to be included, the paragraph right above that, that's the second sentence about the. It says, it is also intended that this urban renewal plan will guide the county in promoting economic development. And I don't get how anything we're doing here guides us in promoting economic development, unless you're saying that we're going to go out and say, hey, we use TIF all the time. I mean, the first sentence says this is what our proposed projects are, but the second one doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, so I think that's still boilerplate language.
Isn't that how Bob wrote it?
That's what I'm thinking. Our original contract was Bob.
Bob Council really addressed.
Yeah, and then we just used it again and again. And so in some places, they may in fact use the urban rural plan to guide promotion of economic development. That's not how Story County has ever used it.
So I'd like to move that we strike that sentence from the document.
We're still discussing, and then we'll get to that as we get to ready to take action.
Okay, sorry.
Yep.
Okay.
So
go ahead.
I'm putting a line around that one. Okay. What else?
That's it.
That's all you have.
That's all I have.
All right. Lucy or Lisa, any issue with that sentence coming out that you can find? I see it as having no substantive impact. It's a declaratory statement. It's not impacting what the urban renewal plan is. It talks about how we might use the urban renewal plan. I see it having no real impact other than just clarification.
Well, I think so. If we're going to change the urban renewal plan, we might
do that
by resolution.
Yeah.
Trigger that change.
Correct. But that all happens as we go, right?
Okay.
This was simply an opportunity for us to clarify everything in here. So all that will happen is when this comes to us for ultimate approval, public hearing is involved and everything else, we'll clarify that this has been taken up.
And when this gets sent out to, when it gets put online and when it gets sent out to taxing entities with the consultation notice, it's shown as strikeout and red line.
Okay.
Those changes are noted.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything about the consultation meeting, and then I'm going to try to move through all three of these items.
None.
Okay. So the first thing that we're dealing with, and what I'm looking for a motion, is to adopt the project schedule as presented.
I would so move that we adopt the project schedule as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any questions, clarification, Leanne, anything to add?
No.
Olson.
Aye.
Chi.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. The schedule is set. Next is discussion and direction regarding amendments to the urban renewal plan. The direction that I'm hearing, Leanne, is that the final sentence in item one will be stricken. That is, it is also intended that this urban renewal plan will guide the county in promoting economic development. That's just being stricken when this comes back to us for consideration. That's the direction, unless Marty, you or Laura have any further direction.
Clarification on page 2, item number 5 should not be red line and red line. That was a change that we made last fall that I missed. So that's already in the adopted plan. Top of page 2, number 5.
I don't have an underline.
I don't either. So
I have no problems with the last sentence.
Okay.
Economic development is not a trigger word or words to me.
Yeah, exactly. So we're good. So there's direction there. That takes care of that item. The next item is discussion and direction to schedule a consultation meeting with affected taxing entities on Tuesday, June 13th at 9 a.m. in this room. And again, to underscore, that is just dealing with the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor, and it will just be those entities that have that within their tax boundaries.
I would move that we schedule that meeting for June 13th, as indicated.
One second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Olson.
Aye.
Chi.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It is set for the 13th. That takes care of urban renewal. Lee, anything to add?
No.
Thank you very much. We are rolling. This is just an honor of Paul Thomas that we're rolling like this. No agency reports, no departmental reports. Other reports, preliminary analysis of the budgetary impact of new election laws. Auditor Lucy Martin, and looking for Kevin.
Yeah. Hold on.
I'll probably change this just now. I just
I don't know if this one falls on the tracks.
This is on the phone, so I'm going to go ahead and start.
All right.
So thank you for having me this morning. We had some sweeping changes to election law this last session, which is why I'm here, because undoubtedly I will be coming before you with both unbudgeted items for FY18 and will also inform my budget request for the next several years. So I wanted to prepare you for those as early as possible, and this is not going to be my last time before you. It's also my first public presentation on this topic. I've had many over the grocery cart conversation or over a glass of beer at the restaurant conversation about these, but not, this is the first formal one. I would like to say that I'm going to have a really nice presentation for you, neatly gridded out, every cost is available. That's not the case. This is a big picture overview. We will be refining this pretty much every week for the next for the foreseeable future. So I would like to say that previous boards have been very supportive of the auditor's office, especially with getting us electronic poll books, which we did in 2012. So I feel like we are much better prepared than a lot of counties going into this, because starting in 19, if you don't have electronic poll books, all of your election day registrants will be processed as provisional voters, which is extremely time-consuming and expensive way to process voters. So thank you for that. There was a lot of legislation passed. I listed three bills that passed. There was HF 516, which I think most people would refer to as the voter ID bill. There was HF 566, which combined school and city elections. And there was Senate File 399, which expanded our visits to, right now we go to healthcare facilities as defined by the Department of Health. This expands to assisted living facilities that are dementia-related. So that's just more work for absentee ward, which is why I brought it up today. So the school and cities, that combination goes into effect in 19. It mostly is a budgetary impact on the school districts, but it is for us because it changes everybody's school polling place, which will trigger a countywide mailing of election cards, which, as we have 67,000 registered voters, it's pretty expensive for the county. So, Kevin is joining me here. Kevin Norris, Deputy of Elections. He's doing all the heavy lifting on this, he and his staff. If his hair suddenly turns snow white, you'll know why. I think the best way to think about this in terms of timeline is that every election between now and the primary of 20 will be handled under a different set of rules. Mm-hmm. So our biggest opponent here is change in misinformation or people's expectations. So a lot of what we're talking about is having he brought our vinyl sign, which is all of our postings that we have at every precinct. We have 43 precincts. We're going to have different signage for all these elections. So that's a cost that is known, because a vinyl banner is $29 as we've listed it. Kevin has been working with Matt Boyk. GIS is getting a new plotter to get a plotter that can actually print on Tyvek and bring the cost of those banners down to about $10 a banner, which would be a great savings, because we're going to have different banners as we roll into the different legal aspects of this. So signage at our polling places is paramount. We're also talking about having handouts available for people to take. And also that plays into additional training for the election officials. So basically, I don't have a fixed cost for a lot of this stuff, but areas where we see costs going up are staff overtime, training, postage, office supplies, additional help, and provisional ballot supplies and training. So scanners and banners are what we know about. So I talked a little bit about the banners. What I will be coming to the board shortly about is to get the barcode scanners for all of our laptop computers. While the law does not, you're not required to have these scanners, but it will certainly cut down the processing time. There will be additional processing time. We're hoping that adding the scanners makes that a wash, right? So that if we have scanners, the extra time that we're going to have at the polling place will be limited by that. What we would like to do is get scanners for the upcoming elections. We have the school election on September 12th, and the city election is on November 7th? I can't remember the date. The ID provision does not go into effect until January 1st of 18. However, I think there will be an expectation from the voters that something is going to be asked. This also allows us to, because with the change in election law, we're always beta testing in real time, right? So this allows us to ease into that process, get our election officials acclimated with some new technology. It's something that other counties have used. The price on these has come down significantly since we first got precinct atlas. I think when we first looked at those, it was going to be something like $28,000. Now we're looking at more like $16,000, and that includes a USB splitter because we don't have enough USB ports on our laptops. So that's a cost I do know about, $16,068.21, which I will bring back to the board at another meeting. So those are really the costs that we know, what scanners cost, what hopefully banners we can get down, bring that cost down. There's a lot of things that we are preparing for, but we can't put a hard number on today. A lot of that has to do with the voter registration card. We had continuing education in mid-May. Kevin asked a really good question, like, can we use our existing card stock or do we have to go to something else? Secretary of State's office couldn't answer that question at the time. And this past Thursday at 5:30, they sent out a survey asking, how do you do it and what do you want it to look like? So that's where we are, very early in the process. Their timeline is this has to be in place by January 1st of 18. We'll see. I hope they don't try to institute something when we're in the middle of a live election for the city. And then with Ames, if we have a runoff election, that's in December. We'll see. A lot of that, what's happening in the background, is that every voter, you already have a unique voter ID number. They're going to add like 4 digits to that so that no one has that number to make it like your secret number. They call it a PIN. You would either use that number, or if you have a Iowa driver's license or non-operator ID, you would use that. So, like I said, they're still working on the format for that card. We don't know what that is. We don't know what the cost is. Right now, we send out postcards. Those currently, for postage, is 34 cents, and printing costs for that, it's about 10 cents a card. So if we go to a letter in an envelope, potentially every voter just got 35% more costly to process. So, we're sort of prepping for the worst.
Sure.
This is all that we can do right now. So voter registration processing, that's a daily process in our office. So the type of card, whether it's an envelope or foldover, how that's done, that's going to impact a daily process for Kevin's staff. And then in an election cycle, we see right now that's handled by usually just one person, maybe two every day. During election cycle, all 10 of us are processing that. And then for a general election, also we have temporary help doing that. So, I'll go over quickly the changes as I see them today on the timeline. For the school and city, you're not going to see a lot of changes. It's really there are changes, but not to the ID component. So really, this is the last gasp of the old world we'll see. And we'll see two separate elections for those. Primary at 18, we have a three-way primary. Libertarians now have party status. And IDs will be required, but in the whole calendar year of 18, IDs are required, but if you don't have it, there is a second affidavit that you sign. So, and then in 19, the general of 18 will have that ID required with the affidavit, and that's the first election we'll have with students because their ISU is not in session in June, so we don't see a lot of student participation in that election. And there's also election day registration, the ID components don't change, but if you have an attester, those rules change. Then in 19, we have, and these are only the scheduled elections, so if we have specials, play that by ear. The 2019 brings a combined school and city election, and that's the first time it's combined. IDs are required. There's no affidavit anymore because that's 19, so we expect to see a spike in provisional ballots as people transfer to the new rules. And then in primary 2020, that's the first election where if you are 18 by the general election date, you can vote in the primary, so that's a new rule. And IDs are required with no affidavit. And then in the general 2020, all rules are in effect, and ISU is in session, and it's the presidential election, so that's our high point. So we'll be rolling up to changes through then, which is why signage is really important.
And no straight party voting in 2020.
No straight party voting in 18.
Oh, I thought that didn't change until the 2020 election.
No, it's actually changed now, but we don't have any partisan elections.
Which should mean, so what, in the last presidential, we had 50,000 voters and 15 or 16,000 of them utilized the straight party mechanism. I would expect that's going to increase the time taken, average time taken for voters.
Yeah, well, 18 is our longest ballot anyway, so people tend to spend more time in the ballot box or the voting booth. That's our longest election. Without straight party, you're either going to see longer time or you're going to see a dramatic increase in undervoting down ballot.
And you're sure that's changed for 18?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's an easy change, actually. I mean, technically, the voter registration is some of it they have to establish rules, but a lot of it has to do with programming of the statewide database as well. So I'm hoping they make that. The first it was sometime in the fall. Now it's December. We'll see as reprogramming iVoters, the statewide voter registration database, is not an easy task, so I do not envy them that. And then a little bit more about the schools and cities, because everybody's in the school district, and this we're going to all 43 precincts. So I think, you know, voters will appreciate the fact that they go to the same place for every single election.
Mm-hmm.
However, technically, it's really difficult for us, but also for the school districts, and I'm bringing up Nevada. It's probably the most dramatic change. Also, Marty served for many years on the school board. So right now, school election in September, everyone in the Bay School District goes to Gates Hall, one polling place. In spring 19, there's going to be the data ballots in 10 polling places. So six of those will be a shared cost between the Bay School District and those cities. But four of those, that's the Bay School District's going to pay full freight on those precincts. So that's a cost to taxpayers. It's not necessarily a cost to us, the county, but I'm bringing that up.
Sure.
So I guess overall, change happening all the way through 20. And then in 2022, we have redistricting, so that'll be changed too. So, and we just anticipate pretty much costs going up across the board. We're going to need more absentee members. We're going to need more election officials. So if I come back to you and say I need to up the salaries for those people, you'll understand. Absentee voters will need to be educated on using numbers on forms. And then election day voters, who are always hard to educate, just about the types of things that they're going to need. So a lot of this plays into the training of our election officials, training of staff, training of ourselves. I see, you know, potential for costs going up pretty much in all of those areas. So that's why I'm here today. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is this is what we think today. We could certainly change our minds as rules come on board, as processes get refined. We hope that, you know, Kevin has been fantastic about using staff when they need to, not keeping people late if we don't have to be here, not working on weekends if we don't have to be here. With the compressed schedule of absentee voting, which doesn't kick in until 18, so we go from the 40-day period to the 29-day period. We also go from having 45 days to process election day registrants to 21. All that could impact both staff overtime and temporary worker overtime. Mm-hmm. Because we're working. We don't expect that the numbers to go down. We just expect to do the same amount of work in a short period of time. So we have to refine all of our internal processes as well. And I have great faith in my staff that they'll do the best they can. Nobody likes to stay late if they don't have to, but I think we're going to see more overtime in that shortened period, at least in the first couple of rounds that we do this. And again, we don't have to worry about this for the fall. And that's what I talk about. I think voters are going to expect this to kick in like yesterday, where it's actually sort of a rolling laws come online on a sort of a rolling period. So.
Right, so we don't have to worry about it this fall, but it makes sense to me, Lucy, what you said earlier, that we're going to try to institute some of it to let our election workers do some of this in an atmosphere that's not quite as heavy of voting.
Right. With the having to do a countywide bailout, we are allowed to do those in lieu of our national change of address process, which is an annual process. So we will try to do that to limit the amount of cost, but it's costly. And when we don't know exactly what format our cards are going to look like, it's really hard to pin that down. So I think the best advice you can give to people and your public officials, I'm sure people are asking you go out there. I'm going to try to come to our quadrant meetings if people have questions about this. But the best advice you can give voters right now is make sure your registration is up to date. If you have an ID, make sure that has your current address on it. It's not expired. That's never not been good advice, but maybe people will take it to heart a little more, not knowing that there are additional requirements for them at the polling place. So I don't know if you have questions for me. I don't know if I have answers. I'm happy to take
questions for Lucy. Good update for us. Quick, Marty.
No, in 2019, when it does sync up between the cities and schools, what month will that take place in?
The city was a big winner on this one, right? They get the same schedule, the same polling place, everything's the same for them. The schools moved to that November.
Okay, it's in November.
So it's November date.
Yeah.
Which I think voters, you know, every November I have to go to the same place to vote. I think that's right. That's the premise behind this.
Well, it ends up costing municipalities less, but the school system more.
I would say so, yes.
Yeah.
You think with sometimes I would think you have non-duplicate numbers showing up, you might actually have more, because I mean the school elections are modest at best.
Right, and I think that was one of the justifications for the bill is that it will increase turnout.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's true.
Okay, we'll see. Laura, questions, comments?
None.
Okay. We'll stay tuned. My one request would be, and this is probably more for Lisa, and I'm not talking about a formal document, but I am very interested in what unfunded mandates are costing us. And so as we know we're doing something based on these new laws that were handed to us, not, and I'm not even making an assertion whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I just want to know what it's costing us and what it's costing.
Right. Like, I think it would be nice if the state had offered to buy us all scanners and full books. They have a revolving fund, which we don't need to access because we already have them. But when you make sweeping changes like this, I'm just happy that Story County is well positioned to deal with this. There are many counties that are not.
That are not. That's exactly
right. Last point, you had said when you started this that you had had conversations with small board over a shopping cart or over a beer. What are people saying about these changes?
Well, that's why we need signs, because people, you know, they have expectations of how it's going to work. And I've had poll workers say, well, I'm not doing that, which scares me, because I already have a hard time recruiting poll workers, but I think we can expect a certain amount of attrition of poll workers. I mean, 83% of them are over the age of 60, so they might take this time to retire from poll work altogether. Just, you know, this is the
last
rock. Yeah.
That's an issue we were dealing with regardless.
That's a national issue.
Yeah.
But this might speed up that process.
We've got to find a way to recruit more younger people to be poll workers. We just have to.
Right. Well, there's all sorts of, you know, things to figure out nationally, like why do we vote on Tuesdays? Why do we vote in November? You know, these
right.
All,
but no imminent changes on those.
No,
we've got to deal with the problems.
No, but,
yeah.
One thing, too, I think we need to reiterate to voters is this is not a photo ID verification. Photo ID has nothing to do with it. It's a signature verification. So I think there's a lot of people that have that. Yeah, a lot of people have that perception that when they hear ID, they think it's a photo ID, mm-hmm. and that's not necessarily the case.
Well, yeah, that's why also I think the scanners, because the scanners will also scan your voter card.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to work for after 18, but it should work for this election. This is the problem. There's a voter card that you get if you have a driver's license, and there's a voter ID that you get if you don't have a driver's license. So I don't like two sets of IDs for voters, but I didn't write the law. So,
Mark, the window got shortened. Can you tell us how much?
It went from 40 days to 29 days. So that starts in 18 as well. So, and that's going to be really interesting because I think in 18, the first day of the 29 days is Columbus Day, which is a postal holiday. So how that's going to play out, I don't know. I don't know if they're going to write rules that we can send out the ballots in on Saturday before that to account for the holiday, or are we just going to eat the day and we really only have 28 days?
Just unless that military ballots are in 45 days.
Yeah, this doesn't actually save us any time. It might make our printers happy, but we have to have ballots ready 45 days ahead of time for our military and overseas voters. So I will just be sitting on ballots for that period of time,
yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
No more questions.
Thank you for the update. We'll
good
look
luck.
For more to come. Absolutely. Next is Community Planning Assistance Team CPAC report, which we were going to do last week, but ran out. It got way past lunchtime, and we had a staff meeting at 2 p.m., and so we held it until now. Leanne.
I hope it's still on here.
What I'm going to share with the board is an update on our community planning assistance team visit and work that occurred several years ago now. But I'm bringing it to you now. One, I think it's good to revisit it and see if there's any next steps you want to take from it. But this is also an opportunity for me to share with you what I shared at the National American Planning Association conference this past May, and I appreciate the board's support in letting me go and speak at the national conference. It was quite an honor, and I really enjoyed doing that. So stop me with any questions. You should have a copy of the report card. These are all the strategies that were included in the report, and I'll go through quickly. Just some idea, how I presented this to the APA conference was these people had no idea what Story Canada was all about. So I started with what the past was, what we had been doing. I won't belabor it. I won't go on that, but really this brought forward a lot of questions then. And set the background why CPAT report and CPAT visit was so necessary. CPAT, for those that aren't aware of it, is a pro bono program of the National American Planning Association. As a AICP, which is American Institute of Certified Planners, it's our professional licensure of planners. I'm AICP certified. We're expected, and not only expected, mandated through our code of ethics, to provide pro bono planning as part of our career and our throughout the duration of our career. CPAT is an organization then that is through the National APA that allows planners to go to different jurisdictions and provide that planning service to communities. We apply for it. There's an application process. We have to cover the cost of the staying, their reservations, and those kind of local costs. But the planners themselves, they put a team together, National APA does, and they deploy his expert planners to Story County then. So a wonderful program, and I'm very glad that we were able to take advantage of it. But I need to set the stage, so I'll go through these quickly. I mean, I won't. The CPAT report was delivered to us in January 2012. We had applied in 2011, and we had the reports kind of published in 2011 October, but then we got the official report and brought to the board January 2012. There were four main focus areas for strategic efforts: vision and long-range planning, strategic partnerships and investments, trails, recreation, other quality of life issues, and county planning organization. So the 22 strategic items on the report card are all fall under these four specific areas. That kind of then dovetailed well with the Government Restructuring Committee, which then reported out in May of 2012. And one of the recommendations of the Government Restructuring Committee's report was to bold down there, prioritize the CPAT recommended strategies and allocate staff resources. So with that, and just go over kind of the report card, what we've done. There were recommendations in regard to planning and development, or what was planning and zoning department. One, the department was renamed from planning and zoning to planning and development. We streamlined development review processes. I know Jerry is really focusing in on this, and as part of his work program, I believe, to bring it forward and make it a little bit more simple and straightforward. We also were charged with doing a comprehensive plan audit. This was to set the stage for a coordinated long-range plan. It was initiated by the board and prepared by the Planning and Development Department in 2013. It was done internally, looking at all the different elements we did or did not have of the comprehensive plan. So this is before the C2C plan was adopted. It looked at the elements, and then in light of the smart planning elements that were adopted by the Iowa legislature. Then another recommendation was start strategic planning, and the board definitely did so. It started in 2013 through a pilot program with ISAC, Iowa State Association of Counties. We brought an entity in to guide the Board of Supervisors and elected officials through that, and now we are on our third iteration of that, but it definitely has made a solid impact on how we go forth with mission and kind of marching orders. And Ironically, this is on here too. One of the recommendations was to start looking at economic development planning, either creating a position within the county or looking at another entity. And today, you approved the contract with AEDC, or not approved. You directed me to bring forward the changes. We've also started technical assistance to communities and then the urban renewal area grant funding. So really, the key emphasis was, build up your economic development planning. In addition, the facade improvement grant program, it was an interesting spin on the recommendation. The recommendation was really kind of do a downtown facade painting program, and that really was difficult for the county to go into the communities. So we put this program into place to let the communities decide really how best to improve their main streets and downtowns. We also have recommendations to do CIP, capital improvements planning, and we've launched that following our strategic plan and done so on annually and based on a 5-year time frame. Land inventories, this is kind of a little thing I do annually that I really don't report back onto the board, but I go through using a GIS, Geographic Information System analysis. I look and see where land inventories are in unincorporated Story County for properties that are zoned commercially and industrially and or assessed commercially and industrially, just to see where some of the vacant parcels remain. I also do this on a residential subdivision basis, too, see how many vacant parcels we have. And I'm coming up on doing this in June, late June, early July. I have a few hours just to sit at my computer and do the analysis. Communication plan was a key element, too, of the CPAT report. January 2014, the board formally adopted the first communication plan. We bring it forth every year. And then adding a position, the County Outreach and Special Projects Manager was added in July 2014, which is my position. Then it also said, let's not only do all these other strategies, have a community vision plan. And that's where we started out in 2014 with the Institute for Decision Making to really start to develop the vision for Story County, which led then nicely into the four elements, growth-oriented, sustainable infrastructure, economy and prosperity, natural amenities, and government leadership, and that learning environments that set the stage then, I'll come back to that one, for the C2C project then. It also said to partner with the Iowa State Research Park, which our mechanism for doing so has been the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. And then it said recommended that Story County look at alternate energy. We'd already had our wind energy conversion system regulations, but they weren't necessarily for individual use, so we added those for individual uses. And then last fall, the board did adopt regulations addressing solar. That gets us to the present. We had, actually a year ago next week, you approved the Cornerstone Capstone Comprehensive Plan, which is the coordinated and long-range plan that the CPAT report talks about. You all know the elements of that. And you then followed up last fall with the implementation matrix. That then, along with the work programs for both myself and the Planning and Development Department, really do operationalize what has been done through the CPAT report or what we're looking forward to in the next coming years to take the CPAT report and what it's built and go forward. So the future of 22 action steps presented in that CPAT report, 16 were completed or ongoing priorities of Story County. Two were determined not to be really a program that Story County could do or an element, such as combining the Board of Adjustment and the Planning and Zoning Commission. The State Code of Iowa just simply does not allow that to occur. One action the previous board did discuss and directed not to proceed, that's the Uniform Building Code, adopting a building code for unincorporated Story County. Two, we are definitely working with as far as the C2C plan. And then one action item, which is the economic gardening program that is up at UNI, is already in place. And I know there are different entities in Story County that do take advantage of that.
Did you say gardening or gardening?
Gardening.
Thank you.
Gardening.
Okay.
So with that, We're checking in today and gave you the report card. We have the strategic plan that will be coming annual review here soon. You did the COOP-COG plan. We're diligently making progress. The C2C plan is the implementation matrix and bringing that forward with work program updates. And then I had to throw the watershed assessments in and make a big point of that when we got to the national APA, because we are definitely leading the Midwest and Iowa and the Midwest, but a lot of areas too with the watershed assessment work we're starting.
Yeah, not only with watershed, but there's not a county anywhere in the Midwest. When you lay it, so sometimes you get, you can't see the forest for the trees, and I think it's very true for those of us who sit up here and deal with it on a day-to-day basis. When you take a look at what Story County has accomplished over the last 6 or 7 years, there's not a county anywhere that's doing these things. It's just not happening. It's a huge credit to Leanne and all of our staff. What we've been able to accomplish. But if you take a look at the things that either came directly from the CPAP report or were spawned from the CPAP report, and I'm talking all the way through to the C2C plan and now our watershed evaluations, the workload that is part of this is phenomenal. It's very cool to see. Thanks, Leanne.
Are there any questions?
No. Laura Hannig?
No, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Lee. All right, next item is update on Squaw Creek Watershed, the pretext. We're getting her here, but we want the update on the Squaw Creek Watershed, and we've got Penny Brown, Huber, and Irv with us.
And I wanted to, again, thank Penny for getting credit. Coming over here and getting Irv over here. It was, as you said, the pretext, but actually, it's been a while since the Squaw Creek, the board has heard about the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority and what's happening that, and we have two new members since the last report on that, so I thought it would be timely as well. But I put my name on instead of Irv so that Irv wouldn't necessarily know that. It was another ruse. So I will turn it over to Penny then.
Yeah, I did a handout.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. So I was like, as I started going through what was posted, I thought, I've read all this.
We're going to give you a little bit of an update.
Still good morning, and I would have never believed it when I looked at the agenda that I was going to say good morning to you.
Thank you for inviting us here. So I will, we can kind of tag team here.
You don't need to share that.
Yeah, he can just speak towards the screen. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, thank you. All right, sorry. So what I handed out to you was a whole series of projects. I thought maybe I would kind of create a little map of how it all fits together and kind of maybe to where we're going. So, of course, we're really proud of the Squaw Creek Watershed Project and the Watershed Management Authority Board and all that has meant. And Prairie Rivers had, the plan had been completed, and then we applied to the Iowa Department of Ag and Land Stewardship for a pretty substantial grant. It's somewhere around $650,000. Half of that goes to farmers, landowners for practices. And we are in the third year of that grant right now. It's been a great journey. It's a very unique project, again. This Hot Can project for Squaw Creek was the only project in the state to actually fund a watershed educator. So we not only have a watershed, full-time watershed coordinator, but we have a watershed educator. So that has been a substantial contribution. And the way that I kind of see this work is you have to think about it as sort of laying layers of work. You know, you have conversations, you educate, and people come to the table with their ideas about maybe how they can improve soil, how they can put practices on their ground. So it's not like something from day one that you see instantaneous practices happening. one of the really exciting things, so we've got 2 years under our belt. We're going to be celebrating a bioreactor, which is a pretty big deal for a new watershed project to actually get a bioreactor actually installed. And so we'll be celebrating that this year. But we also had someone recently walk into our office, and they would like to see a bioreactor go onto their property. So we'll be putting a second one in place here pretty soon. So I feel like the board has been quite interested and active. We meet quarterly, and we've really been implementing the landowner practices. Now we're going to be moving into other parts of the plan, such as thinking about recreational issues, wildlife issues. There's a lot to be tackled. Excuse me. On Saturday at 6 o'clock, the ninth graders from Ames High School had all these projects about earth science. And I went to review because our watershed educator had spent 2 days educating them about watersheds. And I don't know, I mean, this makes me really happy, but there were about 30 projects, and almost every single kid mentioned the word watershed to me, which I just about, I was so giddy when I left there. It's like, they know what a watershed is. It's so great. So the direction I see that moving in, I think we will continue. The Iowa Department of Ag has already indicated that they will be renewing another 3-year grant with us to continue this work with landowners. I think farmers are really interested in thinking about soil health and how really to change their own farms to improve water quality. And we kind of see the work as being sort of layered. I don't know if you want to talk about the board at all.
A little bit about the board. When we first started, there was some reluctance on the part of a lot of the farmers about what we were going to do. I think the word authority scared them. They felt that we were going to impose regulations that they hadn't seen before. And that was totally an error, because the authority means that we have the authority for cities and counties to work together. That's the important part. And since then, I don't know, how long have we been in work now? About 5 or 6 years anyway. And that has gone away. I think we pretty much have overcome that problem that we found among the citizens. They realize what we're doing. Important part is that we're using the nutrient reduction strategy that was designed mainly by Iowa State University scientists to try to do something about nutrients. And it's very difficult to get landowners to adopt some of these, because it's a change in what they've always been used to. And in 2013, the Natural Resources Conservation Service launched a big effort to educate farmers on soil health. And what we found out is that has been slow, but it's gradual, and they're really gaining, I think, the understanding of what soil health means in reducing their input costs. And that, I think, is what's gradually they're becoming aware of. So I think soil health is so important, not only to controlling soil erosion, reducing the nutrient inputs to our streams and effects on water quality, but also the climate change issue. We're sequestering carbon when we're doing soil health. We're putting carbon back in the soil, taking it out of the atmosphere. And I think that I've read estimates that if farmers worldwide would do that, that 30% of the carbon dioxide could be removed from the air through soil sequestration. But as I say, it takes a long time to overcome a lot of the traditional ways of doing farming, and we're making some gains.
We do want to invite you. We have a field day coming up in Nevada Key Cooperative as our key partner there. We're very excited about our field day. It will be in the evening from 4 to 7, and it's actually working in the East Indian watershed, which is kind of odd, but in our watershed grant, we had wanted to support Mike Cox and Story Time Conservation with the Hickory Grove Lake, and so we had committed to doing a field day in the East Indian Creek watershed. So, and then in August, there'll be another field day in Story County, and we can get the dates to you guys so that possibly that you can attend. The way that, as you know, I was like, oh, urban fringe plan, and when we were doing listening sessions for the Squaw Creek, we had, small landowners, acreage owners who talked about, well, how could I get help to do these same types of soil improvement, nutrient reduction strategies? And we recently put a grant into the Natural Resource Conservation Service to actually work with these fringe landowners in the Squaw. It'll just be in the 5-mile radius around Ames in the Squaw on the northern side. There are about 300 of these folks that own 10 to 100 acres. They often may have a stream running through their property. And so we have these dollars from the Iowa Department of Ag for nutrient reduction practices that we can use for these folks, so that's really exciting. And we'll be targeting those folks, and that starts July 1. That grants about $130,000 over 2 years that we've been able to secure. So we've added this Kegley Branch Watershed Project. That would include Ada Hayden Lake, the Bear Creek Watershed Project, includes Roland and Randall and Story City, so it's sort of that northern part of Story. And we're in the process right now of creating a watershed plan for that. Much like the Squaw, we'll make some improvements, but it'll be much like the Squaw Creek Watershed Plan. So we'll have both those two Huck 10s done. We have a dream. There's two more Huck 10s above that of having all of basically this area that drops into the South Stump covered under a watershed plan. And with you guys' assessments, having those in watershed plans, I think we'll actually be able to see change. I mean, it could be.
Right. So we're committed to the assessments. Clearly, we've done that. The key for this board is going to be to figure out exactly what we do with those assessments, what the next step is moving toward a plan.
Yeah.
Where we could truly impact the entire upper reaches of the South Stump.
Right, exactly. One of the exciting things, and I think right now, in terms of a watershed team, we might be the only team in Iowa. Iowa State Ag Research Team, let's not that say, it's the national research team that is located at Iowa State University, that did the agricultural conservation planning framework, and I know those are all like crazy words, but basically what it is it maps, it would map for a farmer, like what types of practices would be best placed on your land where. So where best to put buffers, a wetland, where would be best to put a bioreactor. So we now have our staff fully trained. We have access to that framework over at the Natural Resource Service, and we are beginning to, we're going to do all the maps for these Huck 12s is what the idea is. And then I was also thinking when I was listening to you, Leanne, about these areas around the county that that you own, we could possibly put those areas in this framework too and look at what kinds of practices, if you wanted, could best fit for those pieces of land. It might be just another bit of information to inform the soils. And I'm really excited about having the capability to use this framework to map, so it should be pretty exciting. So we're pretty busy, and we're pretty excited about working with all the communities and the county on watershed projects. It's really been a great experience.
Outstanding questions.
If you go back to the Squaw Creek Watershed Project, you said you started your third year. It was a three-year grant?
It was a three-year
grant. Okay. And either have discussions started about what to do after that money?
So we have a constant continuous review by the Iowa Department of Ag. And we have three reviews a year. So, yeah. So our last review was in, let's see, this was the end of May, so it would have been in April. And he did offer, he said, during, as we move through the end of 2017, he said we will be sitting down to reauthor another new grant for the next 3 years. So they've already made that commitment to us. And I was actually pretty surprised that he made it so early.
Yeah. Well, I think there's real recognition of the work that you guys are doing and the impact that it's having, and really a model that I think they're hoping to replicate in other areas.
Right. They now have funded some additional watershed educators throughout the state, and they actually asked them to put that in their grant, which is kind of unusual. But I think they see the value of that, so
I like when they start copying. That tells me if you're doing something right.
That's really great.
Of course, other questions or comments? Marty?
Thank you. Yeah, you spoke to a bioreactor going in, went down in Polk County, saw one put in last year, and I remember the number was like 15,000. Who funded this one? I mean, was this private dollars or?
So we have something really unique where 50% of a bioreactor, our funds can pay for 50% of it, but then our watershed coordinator can also do all the applications for EQIP and other funding that NRCS actually can apply, you can apply for the farmer. Okay. And so our bioreactor, I think, is going to be close to 90% funded either by state or federal dollars for the landowner.
Excellent. Doctor, as you said there, in see the fall in Iowa changing in a traditional sense because what was brown is becoming green. How does that make you feel?
Very good.
So when you speak of carbon sequestration, that's a positive in a big way, I suspect.
Yeah.
So.
One additional thing I'd like to say is that in the early stages of getting the authority off the ground, Paul Toot played a real
huge,
important role. And I appreciate that Rick Sanders has joined the board now and is showing his vision and leadership has been very important. And in the early days, we had trouble sometimes getting a quorum, but we kept going and kept moving, and that was important. And it was really interesting to see that we had a representative from Stratford who was a young farmer sitting at the table with the mayor of Ames and communicating on a one-to-one basis. It was really, I think, a very changing atmosphere that came about. So, and at the same time, the Board of Supervisors in Hamilton County have not joined the 2080 agreement. The Soil and Water District has, and the new chair of our authority is Gene Eels, who's on that Hamilton County Soil and Water District and has been a longtime member of that commission. And I think that Gene will provide good leadership as well and maybe get the supervisors in Hamilton County to come on board.
If we can get the supervisors in Hamilton County, we've accomplished something.
Yeah. And Kigley Branch is partly in Hamilton County too, and so they will have to be involved in that, and hopefully they will, because they have a lot more drainage districts in their county than than Story does. But it's important to flooding in this part of the Skunk River to get something on the ground that will help relieve some of that flooding.
Absolutely. So one of the hardest things to do in life, not just with watersheds, but anytime you try to accomplish something, is generating that initial momentum that you can actually see a project start to go. And our friend Paul Toot talked many times about how that the first meeting of the Squaw Creek, or the potential for the Squaw Creek watershed, was the meanest, toughest meeting, at least initially, that he had ever been to. And we've dealt with some reasonably tough stuff in Paul's time on the board. But that told me that there was no momentum at all at that point. And through diligence, perseverance, bullheadedness, led primarily, I think, by the two of you and others, not intending to take credit away from anybody else, we have seen this momentum start to grow to the point that now we're seeing farmers who have been farming for 50 years who are all of a sudden taking a new look at their land and what kind of practices they have. And it's just the tip of the iceberg, at least I hope it's just the tip of the iceberg, what we're going to be able to do. But establishing that initial momentum is so important. And there's no way we can thank the two of you enough for getting that established. And now we all come together to try to see what kind of difference we can make. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Outstanding. Public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to address items that are not on today's agenda. The board is not going to take any action because we can't due to the open meetings laws. But we might take action in the future. Anybody wishing to address us on any topic? Seeing no one moving the microphone, liaison assignments, committee meeting updates. Morris, I think you get to start us this week.
Okay, it's a long one. All right. Last week, we had Ames Area Metropolitan Planning Organization met. We approved the planning work program for fiscal year 18. It was pretty much non-eventful. The Iowa DOT had already seen it, and the Federal Highway Administration, et cetera. The highlight was the final part of the SciRide redesign for the final paperwork. And what I'm excited about moving forward for fiscal year 18 is there's going to be some model analysis of possible long-range transportation projects going ahead and looking at the impacts of those. So I'll look forward to seeing what happens there. We also set a couple of hearing dates for June 13th, which is, if you want to comment on the plan, it's usually developed between human service agencies and like SciRide and the providers, and it includes mobility for seniors. We did increase the amount that's going to be spent we approved for bus shelters from $60,000 up to $200,000, and the feds are going to pay, federal government, sorry, is going to pay $160,000 on that. Also looking at the transportation improvement services, the July 11 is the big hearing then for the improvement for the next few years, and the big deal with that is the Grand Avenue extension down from what is now, I think, 5th Street south, and it's going to go down to Southeast 16th, and that's a $17.45 million project, and the request is going now to have the federal agencies pay $5.5 million. It's up about $1.2 million. Heard a board met, and we looked at a strategic plan, and we approved a strategic plan. So after this meeting, I'll be emailing it out to supervisors and Deb and Carla for internal house, and I am assuming that the Curtis staff wants to actually send it to the transportation collaboration, since that was one of the goals, was to produce a strategic plan. I feel good about what's in there. It does talk a lot about collaboration. It talks about better customer service. We all know that when you get a strategic plan with some basic goals that are far-reaching, it really has to do with the implementation of the actual tasks and objectives. So the board, at least I want to see our HRTA board be very involved in seeing those set and met. Okay?
Yeah, let's see that report card here.
Yeah, so we will move forward on this, all right? The Local Emergency Planning Committee met, which is a quarterly group, and it's not just of government entities like first responders, but it includes the facility managers and plant managers of people who are responsible for safety, like at DuPont and for Monsanto, et cetera. And they took a look at the exercise, the full-scale emergency operations command exercise results, and saw a good presentation there. I understand that presentation is going to come to the board also, so I'll get to see it twice and probably learn something. Sue McCaskey
Kraske, Animal Control Director, and I met with the architects for the animal shelter. We were very impressed with the second row of schematics. Deb wasn't able to be there to give her input that day, but I think what Deb will be able to see and everyone will be able to see on our next meeting in June is that Sue's going to bring forward the basic schematics. They have listened. It's very clear that they are responding to what's being asked of the architects are, and they'll be presenting eventually when we get the cost figures. It will come to us in three separate sections. One, the building renovations themselves. One, the site renovations, taking a look at options there. And then the third part of the bill really is that are we going to be able to accommodate livestock there or not? So that will come to us in three separate parts, but we'll get to look on June 13th during Sue's quarterly report to look at kind of an overview schematics of what's going on there so far. Sunday, I went out shifting from animal control, the big picture, to animal control, a specific complaint we had received, supervisors had received. I called Sue on this. This complaint was about horses, a large number of horses, without having any food specifically, and this happened to be a person where the county has dealt with before on the same issue. I called Sue. We agreed. She went out on Friday, and then I went out on Sunday. I've not been able to contact Sue to see if she spoke with the owner. I did not speak with the owner. My husband and I went out and took photos. There was hay there. The animals do not look gaunt. But I do want to talk to Sue further. Also talk to our attorney. The basic minimum wind breaks that are being used out there are a collapsed shed. Literally, the roof is collapsed. And a barn that has, for all practical purposes, missing the bottom 2.5 feet of wood. And the horses just kind of walked through it. So I want to talk a little bit about that. This week, we've got the quadrant meeting, so you guys want to talk some more about. I'll be up in Webster City for community and family resource meeting. Nothing going on there other than the continue to look at the expansion to provide in-service substance abuse treatment, of which our residents from here go also up in Fort Dodge. Also, just to let you know about a little bit, proposal upcoming to the board. There will be a proposal for coming to you, the board, I guess. We'll be bringing it, maybe Deb, I don't know, or we'll work on it. Anyway, to update the 1998 Ames-Storey County Housing Needs Survey, we have located an actual physical copy of it. I guess now Leanne has one, too, finally found hers, but it's been scanned in now, but that needs to be updated, I think, before a coordinated housing plan can be put together. So we'll see whether we'll put that out for RFPs or whether there will be a much reduced cost if the same company updates it. It's pretty old, so it may be a new RFP. Pretty soon, there will be setting a date and maybe approve a very, very minor cost, like $100 or something like that, to hold an input and discussion session on the transportation needs with employers. What I'd like to do is have a that session occur so that employers can come and not and meet with DOT staff and HERTA staff to discuss rideshare. There, in fact, is a rideshare program that just came up with the HERTA, with the Iowa Department of Transportation a few weeks ago, and then HERTA also has a proposed model, but and the real evidence of this would be to get feedback from employers, probably HR managers, I'm guessing, about what kind of transportation they need for their workforce. And that, I believe that we might be able to put out as much within a month or so, organize that over the summer to have that.
No set date yet,
because I'll be coming back to the board, I assume, with something like that we should probably get approval, of the board. And then also, I'll be coming back to the board and we'll be asking to set a date for a workshop on animal control, the fiscal year 18 contract changes. I did not have a chance to check in with Sue or Ethan yet, but the plan was, as Ethan hopefully is done with the amendment itself, to go out. We can start to look at the contract changes that need to be made to get us into July 1 and or slightly thereafter for that. And then we will still be looking 2 or 3 months down the road, examining what are all the options that we have available for with us for partnerships, what type of expanded service, if we are expanding service, if we're, you know, what we need to do. So that takes care of kind of what's going to be on my plate the next week or so.
Super. You mentioned quadrant meetings. Hit the next two tomorrow. Yes. And Thursday.
Tomorrow, next Thursday, 10 a.m. It's in Gilbert at City Hall, and then on Thursday at Huxley at the Dorr Kasem Center, 10 a.m. for that one. Open to the public. The invitations went out to all the township and city officials, school board officials, but it's open to anybody to come. It sounds like Lucy's going to be there and hopefully get some big questions.
Absolutely. Just for clarification, so we do the spring meetings in the morning every year, and we do the fall meetings when we go back to each of our communities in the evening every year, trying to make it as available as possible to anybody we can. So those are the first two, and then the next 2 weeks down the road, right?
Yes, correct. 12 and 14.
Marty, any questions for Morris?
No.
If not, your turn.
All right, I'll be the short one here. We have a Nevada City School meeting on the Rec Center here, as they've done a world shift, and that's what they see it's going to be. So a discussion involving a lot of moving parts. We had the Mental Health Governing Board meeting here last Thursday, and I would say, in addition to just adopting up the new contracts that were reapproved from last time, you saw the adoption of the pay scale that Alyssa worked on that was given to the region, and you know, her work product was adopted whole cloth. It does not bind the other respective counties other than the fact it gives ranges. And it was another win. That just shows the quality of people we have in our service here. Have a follow-up meeting with City of Nevada in regards to their water service issue south of town, and not the least of which, our next week's meeting of the Board of Health will prominently feature Crestia.
Time to get to the end of that one.
We are approaching that point.
Good.
Mind if I hide in the back on that one?
I think the room would. I've got conversations in motion right now in regards to the formulation of that meeting, but there has been a lot of work done by the respective departments this past month that I think has risen to great service to the citizens of Story County to see this park dealt with in a way that I think serves the people both there and the citizens outside.
Yeah.
It's hard. I don't know really how to say it. It's just when you deal with what you find, and what we find has not been easy to work with.
If it were easy, it would already be handled. And so we just got work to do. You mentioned the Nevada Rec Center. As I understand it, just for clarification for me, the concept has evolved from more of a Story County regional type.
The hospital will be released from partnership. The school and the city will pick up a model that they will be addressing both the facilities on multiple structures, a baseball field, and some other sundry stuff.
But more localized.
Much more, yeah. It moves to a Santa Beta project. It releases the county hospital.
Good, good. All right, if there's nothing else, I take a motion.
Oh, yeah. One
more. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I forgot. Innovative lighting. We want to talk about.
Okay. I just have a question, I guess, for Deb. Kind of, when you sent we received an email that a business owner wants to meet with us, but doesn't want to meet with us at the business, wants to meet with us at Roland, where some of the products on display. I was a little unclear the goal of us going to see this lighting.
Sure. So I'll start, and then Deb can add to or clarify if I misstate. So this is Innovative Lighting, which factory headquarters are based in Roland, Iowa.
Yeah.
About 4 years ago, the Board of Supervisors did a tour, as we'll do any time, or to this point anyway, would do any time a local business invited us out to see their production facilities. And this is a continuation, in my view, of that meeting where the owner actually approached me, and Deb, I don't know if you were with me or if I just handed this off to you, but approached me about, hey, I'd like to have, since it's a new board, I'd like to have them come back out to understand what we're doing here in Story County. And as I understand it, the reason we would be going to the Roland Library was they have actually installed the products. So it's LED lighting is what this company specializes in, much different than any traditional lighting that we see. And I think it will be very helpful for us to see and understand what it is. And since it's a Story County company, I feel pretty good about us getting out and taking a look at what's going on in Story County. Deb, please take it from there.
No, that's correct. It was in March, I think, is when Mr. Hansecker had, I'd seen him at actually a candidates forum or a legislative forum. And afterwards, he said he would like to organize something so the board can come and look at one of their products. And about a month ago, then, he reached out. He had been out of state, but he was back, and we started looking at dates, and I looked at calendars, and we landed on sometime in the morning of June 15th. And he said it would make sense to go to Roland Library because that is where one of their lighting products is featured. And so that's where we left it. I emailed the board members just to give you a heads up that that was what we were looking at the morning of June 15th. And I'm waiting to hear back from him on a specific time. There are a couple of other individuals, I believe, from his company that he wants to have present. And so he was looking at their schedules before finalizing the time.
Okay, I'm sorry, Miss, the tour. The tour might be more in line with what my expectation is. Like, you know, we get invited occasionally. We're going to Burke or, you know, in 2 weeks or whatever to see actual production. So I'm really asking, he wants us to come see some lighting. Okay, and do you happen, does anybody know what his goal is from that? I mean, or is it, if it's just to follow up on the tour of seeing what would be the items being made, I'd rather go to see them being made.
Yes, so the difference for him is he's already done that once with the Board of Supervisors.
But
there was, absolutely, and I'm not suggesting that we can't do that as well, but this is his deal. He's the one inviting us, we aren't inviting ourselves. And at that point that we took the tour several years ago, there one of the questions that came out, I think it was Wayne Clinton that asked the question, where can we go to actually see these things that you're producing in use? Because it is a cutting-edge kind of technology. You want to talk about environmental impacts, the amount of energy that these LED lighting systems use are a fraction of traditional lighting systems, and the technology has come so far. I'm actually really, really excited about seeing an application, especially in a library where lighting is pretty important. It'll give me a much better feel. If we want to add to that and ask Mr. Hansecker for another tour of his facility, I think that's great, but that's not what he offered this time.
Okay. All right. I guess maybe I'll just call him myself and ask if I can get a tour.
Sure.
Marty, do you want to go with him?
I just came out of a $5.7 million building project that had a bunch of LED lighting. I already got presentations. I'm pretty tuned up on that in the sense that it is a smart thing. When Rick says a fraction, it's a small fraction of the draw of what the lights are over under. We are, I think, under CIP. We have the building construction here before us. Or would plan to, I would think that would have to be, I would encourage that, I would insist that would be a component of the discussion on any building project that we were in, because the thing is, they have the service life approaching what we are pleased to see on the solar panels. When a 20-25 year service life is there, I guarantee you we're not under any lighting that's going to live that long. Mm-hmm. And we have the draw that it takes is just a fraction. In addition to, all you have to do is see what Alliant does on a periodic basis with unerring consistency, and they always ask for a rate increase.
Right.
So I think that what all you're doing is just taking into account is we would move, you know, you have nothing but to enter this building downstairs and see the plaques were awarded to previous boards that were wise enough to move to geothermal. Well, that's old technology in some sense right now. You're seeing, as it's coming into homes and new construction, LEDs, and I think that's just nothing more than this is. I have known Mr. Hansecker since he was a lawyer on Main Street. And I think that he's grown a business in dimensions to a way that he probably did not anticipate and is quite pleased to have done.
Okay.
But I think on an educational basis, I see this as nothing more. And I encourage anybody that has the business in Story County to do well, and I wish them well. And I don't see anything nefarious here. It's an opportunity to learn if you've not had the opportunity to learn.
Okay, great. That's good. I appreciate the clarification. I wasn't sure whether it was a sales type thing in anticipation of us maybe redoing here or not. In that case, I will. I'll call him to set up the my tour of his factory and then go with the lighting with everybody then. And he does know it would be an open meeting, correct?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Okay, thank you.
Absolutely. Anything else? If nothing else, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Adjourn. Thanks, everybody.